ओम ज्ञानति निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकय चक्षुर नीलितम येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः.
I'm going to speak extemporaneously, which actually I always speak extemporaneously, but without any verse. Now I was just asked a question. One Mataji here had been reading in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam how Krishna in Dwaraka, there's that incident, he was there, of the Syamantaka Jua. So there was a whole conspiracy how the Syamantaka Jewel. It's quite a complex story, but anyway, just this particular point she was asking about, that there was some faction against Krishna. There was some plot against Krishna. Plot? You understand that word? How do you say?
Sadi.
Plot. Sadi. Okay. Sharajantra, it's called in Sanskrit. There was a plot against Krishna to defame Krishna. Now, included among the plotters, actually not, included among the plotters were Akrura and Kritavarma. They weren't so much, their intention wasn't to defame Krishna, but they joined the plot for other circumstantial reasons, because in human society there may be different factions and one person doesn't like another person, and for different reasons. There's a saying in English that politics makes strange bedfellows. So politics may also bring together people of different feelings altogether. Just like you'll find in India, it's very common that, you see, sometimes communist and Congress will come together against BJP. Or even sometimes you see BJP will go with that, what's her name, Mayavati, they went with her, I think they went for some time in UP. You know, they hate each other. But for the sake of politics, they have some immediate program to fulfill, so they find it useful that they have a common enemy and they come together to defeat. Then when they defeat the common enemy, they fight among themselves again. So like that, Kamsa and Kritavarma, they apparently acted against Krishna. Now actually what happened later is that when it became more intense, and there was even some it became, even they wanted to commit violence against Krishna, then Kamsa and Kritavarma withdrew. But the question came that Akrura, she didn't say the name of Kritavarma, but he was there also, how did he apparently act against Krishna? So actually the answer is given already, Prabhupada gave in Krishna book, that the acharyas, they had commented on this. What is the explanation? Because Akrura, he's known as a great devotee of Krishna. He was apparently acting on behalf of Kamsa. Kamsa addressed him as, "You are my very dear friend." Friend of Kamsa. Who wants to be a friend of Kamsa? But he addressed him, "You are my very dear friend. So I've given some job for you. I'm giving you a job. You go and call Krishna." His idea was to call Krishna so he could be killed. That's what Kamsa was thinking. He was thinking, I sent so many of my friends to Vrindavan to kill Krishna. They weren't successful. So let's bring him here and under my supervision we'll get the job done properly. That's what he was thinking. But at the same time that he sent Akrura, he also sent one more demon to Vrindavan, namely Keshi, to kill Krishna, or as Prabhupada comments, to be killed by Krishna, which is what actually happened. So, as Akrura was going to Vrindavan, he was thinking, I'm so fortunate. Today I'm going to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who even great yogis and devotees, they may not see him, but I'm going to get the opportunity to see this original Personality of Godhead. And he was thinking as he was going from Mathura to Vrindavan that even though I'm coming as a messenger from Kamsa, who is a sinful demon, that Krishna, he knows my heart. He didn't feel that Krishna will reject me, but he knows that in my heart I am a pure devotee of Krishna. So surely he will accept me, and maybe he will even embrace me. So these were the pure devotional feelings of Akrura, and actually Krishna and Balaram received Kamsa very nicely. And the next morning, Kamsa's representative, Akrura, took Krishna away from Vrindavan for the purpose of going to Mathura and killing Kamsa, and then killing so many other demons, and then so many other pastimes evolved. After having so many girlfriends in Vrindavan, he settled down and got married. 16,108 times. And he established a home, proper home. He became a respectable citizen. From the external point of view, he was a wild youth. But as he grew up, he became a respectable gentleman. So, don't worry, mothers, there's hope for your sons yet. So, Akrura took Krishna away from Vrindavan. And as a result of that, all the residents of Vrindavan simply cried, non-stop. They were feeling great distress. And they were thinking, how strange is fate that someone called Akrura has come. Akrura means one who is not cruel, but he has done the most cruel thing, which is to take Krishna away from us. So the gopis, they were thinking that Akrura, they were not happy with him at all. They were very unhappy. Even another time, a very nicely decorated chariot came, arrived, and they saw outside Nanda Maharaj's house one nicely decorated chariot, and they thought, oh no, another chariot. Last time a chariot came, because in the Vrindavan forest you don't see chariots, that is for the cities. They thought, oh no, another chariot, what is this? Last time a chariot came, that was this sign of bad fortune for us. Akrura came and took away Krishna. They thought, again, some bad thing is going to happen. But then they thought, actually no bad thing can happen. Already Krishna is taken away. What else could happen? No one can do anything to us now to make our fate worse. Our life could not be worse than it is. So whatever happens, then we cannot be in a worse situation than now, because already Krishna was taken away. And actually, who had come at that time? Uddhava had come. So, he gave some solace to the gopis by discussing Krishna's pastimes with them. And they treated him like a guru, but actually he was thinking that Krishna has sent me here to Vrindavan to learn about bhakti. Because in Dwaraka, Uddhava was famous as the best of all devotees. But when he came to Vrindavan, he thought, actually I have to learn about bhakti. Anyway, that's a side issue. We're talking about Akrura. So Akrura took away Krishna, and as a result, all the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, they felt very much afflicted that Krishna has been taken away. So it's described that why did Akrura, the question comes up, why did Akrura in Dwaraka, in this incident of the Samantaka jewel, then why did he take a position apparently against Krishna? So the answer is given by the acharyas that he did so because of his offense to the gopis. His consciousness became materially afflicted. So that is the explanation given. But the explanation itself raises more questions. Now, one question is that how can a pure devotee, how can his consciousness be thus afflicted how can he become materially affected? He's a pure devotee. Another thing is that, well, how is that an offense? Oh, you can understand how the gopis must feel offended. Although they didn't feel very happy with Akrura. But at the same time, if Akrura had not taken Krishna away, then Krishna's pastimes, how would they have happened? Krishna, he is Vrindavan-nath. But he's also Mathura-nath. He's also Dwaraka-nath. He has to go to complete his pastimes. He comes for what purpose? Paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata dushkritam. He comes to kill all the demons. It's one of his purposes. And when he sent Uddhava, he sent a message to the gopis that actually, I told you I would come back. I will come back, but first of all, I have to kill all these rascal demons. I have to finish them off. Because if I don't finish them off, then they'll come. Just like Jarasandha, he's always coming to Mathura and attacking. Then he'll destroy the whole of Mathura. He may come with, after finishing off Mathura, he may come with his whole army and destroy Vrindavan too. So I have some responsibility to deal with all these demons. So I have to finish off these demons and then I'll come very peacefully and we'll live together in Vrindavan. So Krishna, he had some function, apart from killing all the demons, then he had to marry Rukmini. And usually we think Rukmini, and just like we have in our temple, Rukmini Satyabhama. But actually, Satyabhama, she wasn't number two. She was number three wife. Number two was, again, connected with Samantaka jewel, was Jambavati. And then Satyabhama was the daughter of Maharaj Satrajit, who was keeping the Samantaka jewel. So Jambavati was number two after Rukmini. So Krishna had to marry them all. And so many queens, so many pastimes, living in Dwarka, pastimes of the Yadu dynasty, and even before that he got his education. He spent some time with his so-called real parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. And he had so many other devotees to live with also. But the residents of Vrindavan, they were thinking, Krishna, he belongs here in Vrindavan. Even when they saw him later on in Kurukshetra, they thought, this isn't really Krishna. What is all this? Dressed up in fancy clothes like a big king with so many horses and elephants and big fanfare and trumpets and what is all this? It's not Krishna. Krishna, he's with us in Vrindavan. They didn't write, they said, who are you? We know you in Vrindavan. Simple village boy. Now, another point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to teach or to demonstrate that the highest stage of love of God is love in separation, just like the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis. Their feelings for Krishna were most intense after Akrura took away Krishna. So if he hadn't taken them away, then how could they have had those feelings and how could Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have taught about that? So when Akrura took Krishna away, he was actually instrumental in Krishna's leela. That was required. But at the same time, the gopis were feeling, they didn't think, okay, it's all part of Krishna's leela. They didn't have any such feeling. They thought, he took him away. He's our Krishna. They felt very pained at heart. So that was apparently an offense. How can it be offense? It's all part of Krishna's pastime. So, the explanation given that Akrura became somewhat materially affected because he offended the gopis. But then his apparent offense to the gopis was only for, actually that was for facilitating Krishna's pastimes. So it becomes very complex. Now one thing we have to understand, that great devotees like Akrura, if they appear to be materially infected for whatever reason, we shouldn't think actually they're materially infected. There's some purpose for facilitating Krishna's pastime. Just like Arjuna, he appeared to be a bewildered conditioned soul. He didn't know what to do. He wasn't sure. Should I fight? Should I not fight? So he appeared to be a materially infected soul, but he appeared so. Why? That was to facilitate Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to you. First of all, are we really ready to say to Krishna, Shishyas, Shishyas Teham Shadi Mahantvam Vapandam? Are we really surrendered to Krishna? That we can say, yes, I'm a soul surrendered to you. Are we fit to ask questions like Arjuna asked, King Tad Brahma Kim Adhyatma, King Karma Purushottama? Very complex questions. Are we fit to understand Krishna's explanations? If we were there on the battlefield, we'd still be there trying to understand the first verse. So to facilitate Krishna's pastimes, there had to be a devotee who could understand properly. So Arjuna understood. He appeared to be materially affected, but actually he's a great devotee. Therefore he could immediately pick up. Even though he appeared to be materially bewildered, he could pick up very quickly what is the message of Bhagavad Gita. So sometimes devotees, they may be, appear to be materially affected. Just like you see our Prabhupada, he was in the Gaudiya Math. He was a householder. And people thought, he's a nice devotee. But they didn't know he's a great acharya. He appeared to be like a businessman, a householder doing his business. Nice devotee. They couldn't imagine. They thought, he's just another businessman struggling to do his business. And he's also a devotee. But they couldn't recognize what a great devotee. You see, Rupa and Sanatan, such great devotees, devotees in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line, the scholars call them Chaitanyaite Vaishnavas. But we don't say. We say Gaudiya Vaishnava, or another term we have is Rupanuga, follower of Rupa Goswami. Actually, not exactly follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, follower of Rupa Goswami. There are many people who claim themselves to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Rupanugas they don't accept. Those who claim themselves to be followers, Aul, Baul, Tata, Bhaja, Nera, Sai, Sahajiya, they are upper sampradaya, they are not followers. They are not proper followers of Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami, he has a very special position that he has given the process of devotional service. In his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. I'm just going to take this because I'm getting a pain in my back. It's too soft. Just take it out.
I'll just sit on this.
Just leave it. He understood what is the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's another very big topic. Sri Chaitanya Manabhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vadati Swapadantika. That's a very, very big topic. Now Rupa Goswami understood what is the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is his inner heart's desire? So this Rupa and Sanatana, they were leaders of the six Goswami. But their names were formerly Davya Khas and Sakharmal, Muslim names. So once one devotee asked Prabhupada, Dashamati Nanda, people asked Prabhupada, then why they had Muslim names and why they presented themselves as very fallen. They're actually from very high class Brahmin families. So Prabhupada said that they probably took on some Muslim habits. If they had a Muslim name, it means they must have been practically in some sense like Muslims. Although actually there you see Sanatana Goswami, you can still see his deity of Madan Mohan. He was worshipping. Even at that time. But they must have been somewhat like Muslims. Which nowadays we say, Sarva Dharma Samabhav. All the religions are the same. But actually it's not true. Being a pure Vaishnava and being a cow-eating Muslim is not the same. There is a difference. Cow-eating Muslim may believe in God in some vague way, but it's actually it's not an elevated position. So it's not all the same. That is a fallen position. In Hindu society at that time, it was considered a very fallen condition to be a meat eater. Nowadays it's a very normal thing. But in those days it was considered very fallen, extremely fallen. Not only to be a, even if you yourself were not a meat eater, I'm not saying exactly that they were eating meat, we don't know. But they were thick, we can say at least that they were thickly associating with Muslims. So they presented themselves. Nicha jati, nicha shangi, patita adham. They said we were very low born. Actually they were high born by worldly estimation. Nicha shangi. We associate with very low class people. We are very fallen and very rascal. Patita adham. This is how they presented themselves. So, Rupa and Sanatan, for some time they appeared to be very fallen. Bhakti Rao Thakur, although born in a Hindu family, he practically almost became like a Christian at one point in his early life. He had a Christian education. So of course we can understand that these are all the pastimes of the Lord, because when Rupa and Sanatana, they came in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were actually writing letters to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we want to get your association. And then when they got the chance, they left everything. Tyatva, Turna, Mashesh, Amandala, Pati, Shanim, Sadat, Tuchalat. They gave up all their high position and their big aristocratic leaders of society. They gave it up as insignificant and immediately went to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he came in contact with the genuine teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, immediately took it up. So we can understand that anyone who writes songs and books and has such exalted activities like Rupa Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that they must be great pure devotees. They're not ordinary devotees. Apparently they may have for some time appeared like materialistic people. We can understand that this is only some show, some external temporary show. Actually they're such exalted devotees. We can't even begin to imagine how great are devotees. How great devotees are Rupa Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We can't even begin to imagine the platform of devotional service they are. They're so exalted. So if they exhibit some apparent materialistic tendency, we can understand that this is just some arrangement of the Lord to show, to give us some hope that we are actually Nicha Jati, Nicha Shongi, Patita Adham. Kubishoi Kupe Pare Goaino Jano. We are actually in this situation. We've fallen in the situation of ghastly worldly sense gratification in the deep well of worldly sense gratification. This way we have passed our lives. This is our situation. But that's to give us some hope that anyone from any situation, they can come up in Krishna consciousness by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even though we're very fallen, we can come up. So there may be different reasons, but sometimes devotees, they appear to be great pure devotees. They may appear to be materially affected. Something wrong with that? But we shouldn't think this is a materially affected person. You should understand. This is a great devotee. Now, there may be some complex issue here, some deep points to understand. Because this, just like this verse is here, apichet sudarachara, bhajate mam ananya bhav sadhureva samantana samyadhyaya vasitamisa. If one is fully engaged in Krishna's service, has a very strong desire to serve Krishna, but at the same time, sometimes some bad tendency may come, still that person should be considered saintly. Because their intention is only to serve Krishna. Maybe due to some bad habit, or some circumstantial reason, someone whose only intention is to serve Krishna, they may have some lapse of behavior. But Krishna says they should still be considered a devotee because their intention is ananya bhajan, selfless or undeviated service to Krishna. And the symptom, that is, kshipram bhavati dharma, next verse. They will, very quickly they'll become properly situated. Now, how is this to be understood? Generally, when we first come to devotional service, we may be very innocent, and we may tend to think that, well, every devotee is a fully pure devotee. But then after some time, we may find, well, actually, not true. We may not like to say openly, but we may see in persons that we very much respect, or we expect to respect, that maybe they have some characteristics which are not indicative of pure devotion, of pure devotional service. Now, how are we to understand that? Does it mean that everyone who is in devotional service but they have some bad character defects, does it mean they're all actually like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Rupa Goswami, that they're pure devotees but they just have some defect here? Or does it mean that they're all pure devotees or just having some lapse? Or if we study Prabhupada's books, we may find also that there are descriptions of devotees who are dhinnadrik. Then here, ananya bhav, that word is used, that they have no other desire to serve Krishna. But Lord Kapiladev himself, if you see in Bhagavatam, he gives analysis of devotees who are serving Krishna, but actually they have some other interest also. They're not ananya. Ananya means without any other motive. But it may be that someone is serving Krishna with some other motive also. Mixed motivation. So Lord Kapiladev has given that description to help us to choose, first of all, to see what is our own heart. Is our own heart pure? But also to choose our association. Because if we associate with those who are ananya bhava, those whose motive is completely pure, that will help us to become completely purified. But if we associate with devotees whose motive is mixed, then it will be very difficult for us to become ourselves unmixed. Now, this is a very delicate point, because what happens often is, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that sometimes our motivations, someone has a desire to serve Krishna, but that becomes mixed with some personal material desire. And we may not notice the difference. For instance, we may think, I may think, I'm sitting on a chair above you, and I may think, it is very proper and correct that I sit on a chair above you and you should all bow down to me. That will be good for you, because I am a more elevated devotee. So if I'm thinking like that, theoretically, philosophically, it may be true. But if I'm thinking like that, then I should be beaten on the head, and I will be beaten on the head by Maya very severely. If I'm thinking, you should bow down before me, that is good for you because I am so elevated, then it means that if I'm thinking that's good for you, maybe there's some motive how others may be benefited by my so-called preaching. But then if I'm thinking, people should respect me properly, why aren't they respecting me properly? If I'm thinking that I myself have some position that should be offered respect to, then that is a mixed motive. If I think that I have been deputed by my spiritual master to give instruction, actually, I am not at all fit, but I've been told to do so, it's my duty to do so. And if anyone offers respect to me, that actually I'm not fit for that, I'm not at all fit for that, this is being offered. Why? Because Prabhupada is very great. And because people, they see me in relationship to Prabhupada, therefore I'll offer any respect offered to me up to him. So if I think like that, then I might be able to take this very dangerous position of sitting in a chair higher than others. You may think, well, it's not very high, I've seen higher ones.
But even a little bit higher, that means I'm accepting respect, which is very dangerous. So one can do so and not be affected if he offers everything to Krishna. But if we think that if there's a little bit of mixed motive, we may not recognize. We may think, you see, everyone, they should respect me. Why are they not respecting me enough? If there's a little bit of personal desire for honor, then my devotional service is not pure. And actually we can't benefit anybody. You may think, I'm preaching, I'm speaking so many things, others will be benefited. They won't get any benefit. Because our preaching is not for the glory, actually it may be for the glorification of Krishna, but it's mixed with the motive that I shall become glorified. And what tends to happen is that one becomes more and more infected. It's like a cancerous growth in the consciousness. That when we're thinking, I'm doing this for the glorification of Krishna, but actually we're doing it for the glorification of the big ass that I have become. Because we're thinking, I should be glorified. So that's one example. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned against pratishtasha, the desire for honor. Bhaktivinoda Thakur warned, pratishtasha ashi vidoi dushibe hoibo nirayagan. If the desire for respect enters the heart of a Vaishnava, then he becomes a candidate for going to hell. The consciousness becomes contaminated. So these are mixed motives. They can come in many forms. Someone may desire, I will speak nicely, and then people will give donations, then I'll become rich, or I'll maintain my family very nicely. Or people may take Krishna consciousness as a kind of career. One time I was in Burma, I used to visit there, Myanmar. I used to visit from time to time. Mostly when I was a brahmachari before I took sannyas. So some people I used to visit there, really some Marwaris, and they were calling me by my brahmachari name. And I told them, well, actually I took sannyas now, so now my name is changed. So one man turned to another and said, promotion, hold up. He got promoted, took sannyas. So they were business people, so they were thinking in terms of, oh, in the institution he got a promotion. He's not brahmachari, sannyasi. So if you're thinking, I will get a promotion. Now I'm a brahmachari, I will become a sannyasi. Or now I am a temple president, I will become regional secretary. Then I'll become GBC. Of course, you're lucky, you're not involved in all these things. You won't become GBC. Not very likely. But even you see at this Namhata level, you may think that, well, I'll increase the number of Namhatas and then I'll become a circle leader and there'll be so many Namhatas under me and I'll tell them what to do and it'll be wonderful. Everyone will give me so much respect. Of course, I don't think anyone's directly thinking like that. But Maya is very subtle. There may be some indirect, or some, we may not even recognize the desire is there. So devotional service may be mixed with material desires. And if we have mixed motives, then we don't qualify for this verse. That even if one is performing wrong activities, he's still considered a sadhu if he's ananya bhav. Ananya means the only motive is to satisfy Krishna. But if one has mixed motives, then even in the beginning one may come with a pure desire, but because of bad association or because of not being very careful in devotional service, then the material desires may again enter the heart and mix up with the desire to be a pure devotee. And one may think, yes, I'm sincerely trying in devotional service, but actually he's cultivating wrong desire. So it's not that everyone who is performing devotional service, even in such an idealistic movement as ISKCON, it's not that everyone's on the level of a Krura or Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Please don't put on the floor. So it can be, we have to be very, very careful in devotional life. With our own motives, who we associate with. Now, of course, it may not be that we just say to go to someone and say, I'm not going to associate with you anymore, you're a mixed devotee. We may not say that. Our general tendency should be to see all devotees as elevated persons who are sincerely trying to serve Krishna. But at the same time, it may be. Not everywhere, not in all cases. But unless there's unless we keep very prominent the desire to be a very pure devotee of Krishna, unless this mood is cultivated very strongly among our devotees, then the tendency will be that we will become mixed with Maya. So we have to be very, very careful to give a very strong rule that what are we here for? What have we come to this movement for? We have come here to serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, to give up our material desires, to be pure devotees of Krishna. This is the mood that we need to cultivate. Very, very strongly. We shouldn't, you see, even among devotees, we can associate together in a manner which is actually not very devotional. We may come together and just have some chit-chat. How are you? What are you doing? How are you feeling? So that may be there. But really our mood should be very strongly how we can cultivate pure devotional service, how we can surrender to Krishna. Unless we keep that very prominent and strong, how can my heart be free from material desires? Unless we're thinking like that, then material desires will enter. We're trying to get them out. Just like on a boat, the boat is sinking, the water is entering. We're trying to throw out the water. But unless we're very careful, the water will, there'll be a hole on the other side and it will come in the other side. So, if the boat fills with water, then we'll all sink and drown. So, we have to keep our position very pure. It can be difficult. We have to know that we have to keep good association. We have to not make offenses to anyone. We have to keep our desire very, very strong to be a pure devotee of Krishna. We came for this purpose. When we read Prabhupada's books, we don't find any recommendation to become a mixed devotee of Krishna. Even there's some kind of, not exactly a recommendation, but some kind of hint that that is possible. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara dhi ti vrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. That is stated in Bhagavatam, that whether one is free from all desires, full of many desires, or desiring liberation in all circumstances, one should very strongly worship the Supreme Lord by Bhakti Yoga. So it may seem by this example that mixed devotion is being recommended, but it's not. Because it's stated, Tivra Bhakti Yoga. Whatever situation one is in, one should very strongly worship the Lord. That means that if you very strongly or very concentratedly worship the Supreme Lord, then even if you have all material desires, they'll all go away. So actually, only pure devotional service only is recommended in Bhagavatam. So this really has to be our aim, that we have to try to be pure devotees. So to get back to that original point, the question about Kamsa, it is difficult to understand. It's not possible to understand that any material means. That is the nature of the Lord's pastimes. They're not understandable by any material means. Achintya Lila Prabhur Ati Shudurbo. That is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That the pastimes of the Lord, they are achintya. We may analyze them to some extent, but actually by our brain power, we cannot understand them. They are Ati Shudurbo. Durbod means difficult to understand. Sudurbod means very difficult to understand. And Atisurdurbod means very, very, very difficult to understand. Means it's not possible. Achintya. Not within the scope of brain power. But if we get some drops of the mercy of Krishna, then we can begin to understand. Actually, the pastimes of Krishna, they're not so much to be understood. Not in a academic manner. But they are to be relished and experienced and entered into. From the gopis' point of view, Akrura is wrong. They're pure devotees. But with the acharyas, they analyze that, well, after all, Akrura is a pure devotee. So actually, he can't do anything wrong. But from the gopi's point of view, he did something very wrong. He took Krishna away. So what are we to say? Are the gopis wrong? Are the gopis, they're envious of Akrura, or they're making wrong value judgments? They're unnecessarily blaming him. We can't say that either. This is all happening on a platform of spiritual existence where actually there is no envy of Krishna. Things happen in a different dimension beyond our crippled manner of thinking, that we want to understand everything in terms of our brain power. What can we understand about Krishna's pastimes? That's why sometimes Prabhupada, he was asked questions about the spiritual world. What's it like there? How does it happen? Prabhupada said, you wait till you go there, then you'll see it. We don't try to understand so many things. Devotees used to ask so many questions about Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada said about Krishna book, you just read it and enjoy it. That's all. Don't ask so many questions. Of course, so many questions will come, and by the questions coming, then some more discussion of Krishna's Leela will come. But the point that we should try and analyze and understand everything, what are we going to understand about the devotees? What is their mentality? Pure devotion to Krishna on a platform so far above ours, which is crippled by kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsara, then how are we to judge? Who are the gopis? Who is Akrura? Who are these great devotees? So we shall simply worship Krishna and his devotees for their wonderful exchanges of love, and pray for their mercy that we can enter into these wonderful pastimes. That can be entered into by the mood of service and surrender. Hare Krishna. Having said that, no questions. Don't ask questions, just anyway, are there any questions?
possible that the person is serving Lord. It's possible that this person is selfish motive.
Why don't you speak loudly so that others can hear also?
When a person is serving Lord, it is possible that his own selfish motive is also entered into that. And it can happen in our case also, in my case also. So, how do we identify that?
Yes, good question. How do I identify that? Is my motive pure or not? Well, our only guide will be our actual sincerity. We have to pray to Krishna, please rid me from all material desires and make me a sincere servant of your lotus feet. Our acharyas have given us many nice prayers and songs that we can recite and enter into the mood of pure devotional service. Ai nanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam budho kripaya tava pada pankaja sthita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying, teaching us how to pray. That my dear son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servitor, but somehow or other I have fallen into this horrible world of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as an atom in the dust of your lotus feet. So like this, we complain. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us such a wonderful instructive song. Gopina nama nivedana shuna vishayi durjana sada kavarata kichunahi mayagun. So the whole song is like this. He's praying that, Gopinath, I'm so fallen. My heart is full of so many material desires. I have no good qualities. Please establish me in your service. Nevertheless. So our acharyas have taught us this Bhaktivinoda song, how we should pray. So we should enter into that mood of praying to Krishna. Please free me from all offenses and from all material desires and establish me as your servant. Sincerity is required. Sincere desire to serve Krishna and please Krishna.
Yes, here, while practicing devotional service, we have a lot of anarthas. Definitely we have the desire for name, fame, glories. So while we are doing some preaching activities, what will be the result? Because even though we have desire, our desire is to serve Krishna, but it's mixed more.
Yeah.
What will be the result in preaching?
What will be the result in preaching? As much as we are pure, that much the result will be there. If we preach with mixed motives, it may be that people come due to some attraction, but after some time they'll go away disappointed. And we see that many times. People come to Krishna consciousness. Some people, they may be very good at attracting others, but actually they're not properly situated on the pure platform. So people come and after some time they go away disappointed. That I thought this was a saintly person, but now I found something different. That's why it's stated actually in Shastra that in accepting a guru, one should examine carefully. Because once you make a commitment, it's very serious. So we should actually, that is the injunction of Shastra. You should examine carefully what is the character of a person you want to accept as guru. And the guru should also carefully see what is the character of the prospective disciple. You should see. Nowadays we think it's just some kind of, okay, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for some time, I should get initiated. Okay. Get a boom, rubber stamp, your name is. But no, you should see what is the character. That is your duty as a prospective disciple, to examine what is the character of the person that you want to entrust your spiritual life.
You said, Maharaj, after knowing that the person who is preaching
behind the same flame of Guru's voice, he sees a preaching activities or...
Should someone who we detect in our heart there's some desire for name and fame, should we cease? No, we should not cease preaching. But we should cease to be a rascal. Preach for Krishna's sake, not for our own so-called name and fame. Even we may, it may be difficult to throw out all the anarthas immediately, but we can pray to Krishna that you please purify me, that I have a duty to do. People are suffering in material life. It's my duty to give them knowledge of Krishna. That you can best do by giving Prabhupada's books and teaching people that you don't just listen to me, but you see what is in Prabhupada's books. Not presenting myself, I am a great authority. I am a servant of the acharyas. I can only speak to you what I have taken from the previous acharyas, from Prabhupada's books especially. Not like some Sai Baba comes up and just, you know, what he speaks and this is spiritual. No. I am speaking only on the basis of this.
I have a question. It's not concerned about preaching. It's concerned about the performance of one's duty and whether it contradicts pursuing Krishna consciousness. Like a person in business, he has a motive to expand the business, bring profit in the interest of the employees, in the interest of the customers.
In the interest of the employees? Are they really? I mean, they say like that, but I don't know if the... I don't think the employers are really very much interested in the employees.
It is his duty to sustain.
They say like that.
Okay, it is his
but
duty.
Their real motive is how I can get money. And if they don't get enough money, then they sack the employees.
Okay.
That's
it. It is a duty for him to pursue the business, or a person working somewhere.
Duty, they say, but actually it's money motive. It's not so much duty. It's not that I'm doing my... just out of duty I'm doing. I think I can make money. That is the dharma.
Okay. And then a person working in a company or so, he has to improve in his career, show his efficiency. So there is a motive for him, you know, personal motive to come up in the career. But simultaneously he pursues Krishna consciousness also. Does it contradict with his performance of duty? Because he's got a motive, personal motive to come up in the...
Any personal motive for personal self-aggrandizement in this material world is certainly contradictory to Krishna consciousness. However, it is possible to, Prabhupada used the word dovetail, to bring together desires, material desires, it is possible to bring them into Krishna consciousness. For instance, one may be on the verge of a career promotion, then he takes to Krishna consciousness. Then he begins, no, I'll just be satisfied with what I have. That may be alright, but actually if he thinks I'll get a career promotion, well, you have to see. If by that promotion I have to work more hours and I have less time for sadhana and serving Krishna, then maybe you shouldn't take that promotion. Maybe you should be satisfied with a simple job which gives you sufficient income for your material needs and time to serve Krishna. But if on the other hand, by getting that promotion, you still have time to do your sadhana and you get more income which you can use maybe to... Something wrong? Sit peacefully. If with that extra income you can offer more donation to Krishna, or you can save money by which you could retire early and then you can fully dedicate to Krishna, or by having that promotion that puts you in some position of authority by which you can use that to influence others to come to Krishna consciousness, then that may be accepted. It may be complex. We have to see. Or it may be that I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, but realistically speaking, I have this material desire, so anyway, I'm going to go for it. That may not be very pure, but it may be realistic.
But that could also spoil our spiritual life. We have to be very careful. We have to put our priority, get our priorities right. Even in material life they say this, you have to get your priorities right. That if you're working so hard, you're what for your family, but then you never see your family, then what is the use? So it may be better not to work so hard, have less income, and spend more time with your family. That's on the material plane. Then what to speak of in Krishna consciousness? We shouldn't work so hard that we have no time for Krishna bhakti. Then there's no use. We say working like an ass, but many people are working harder than asses. The asses, they also get some leisure time. What is that bell they're always ringing?
Ice cream.
Again and again they're coming. Same street.
Night time,
what does that mean? So many coming again and again. There's one lecture you can hear, and I think it's in Los Angeles. The bell is ringing. It's some mechanical bell. So ding ding, some music. The Prabhupada said, what is that? Oh, they said, they're selling ice cream. Prabhupada said, that is Maya. They are calling you. Come and enjoy. Exactly the same thing Prabhupada asked. What is that bell? So someone who is addicted to sense gratification, they hear the bell and they think, oh, ice cream. The saliva comes on their tongue. Actually, I think this is very cheap, not very good. No, but anyway, the people who are taking that, they are attracted. The richer people, they're going to the ice cream parlor. Basket Robbins or whatever it is. 59 varieties or whatever it is. In Gujarat they have, what's it called, Verimals or something. There's so many different varieties. Oh my.